Thanks for listening to that incredibly self-indulgent but great fun birthday tribute from all my family and friends. Thank you also to all of you who called in for the town hall tickets. Don't remember the other person, but congratulations, Richard Schoen, who'll be seeing the TAP show at Town Hall. But we're going to be talking about another show for the next 20 minutes. It's called Landscape of the Body, and it's a revival of a John Guare play that is being done at T. Schreiber Studios in Manhattan, off Broadway. And we have the director, and not only is he the director of that show, but he runs the whole darn place and has been doing theater and directing and specifically teaching acting for more than 3 decades now. So without further ado, I want to get right to it. He's on the phone with us now, I hope. Terry Schreiber, are you there?
I am there, Dave.
Hey, Terry. Thanks for coming on Dave's Gone By. How you doing?
I'm doing good. That ad you just had on for that meal was just marvelous.
I know.
I'm waiting to have dinner when we finish, and that was just a wonderful ad.
We'll get there before it starts snowing. It's in Rockville Center. You can probably, if you have a car, you can probably drive from New York there in about an hour.
Okay.
Anyway, it's good to talk to you. Mike, I have heard your name, ever since I've been in the theater business, per se, for like 20 years, and you've been doing this 10 years before that. But why don't you explain to folks, I know it's not fair to do your own introductions, but I gave a little bit about who you are, but just tell the world.
Well, Dave, I came to New York as an actor in 1960, and did quite a bit in acting between 1960 and 1969, and I never made any conscious decision really to stop acting. It just suddenly in 1969, I started out of a tour I'd been on to do some teaching, and I just realized I wanted to stay more based in New York. So I started teaching at several different studios in New York, and about a year later I went on my own, and then it just gradually grew into not only teaching but doing productions. And about a year later, also taking over a theater up in Vermont, and we'd do a season from fall till spring in New York, and then start all over, do about 5 plays up in Vermont during the summer, and that kept up for 2 years. And the whole thing just evolved, that I found directing much more fulfilling than I ever found acting, even though I got to do some multi good roles. But suddenly I realized, wait a minute, I'm just so much more immersed in this on a deeper level than I ever was as an actor. And I'm really...
Not to break in, but why is that? Why did directing click for you in a way that acting didn't quite?
Well, because it's working on the whole, not just the part. I mean, I think an actor's job is to, just work on the role that they're doing and leave it at that, and you don't get involved, I mean, you have to obviously work who you're playing opposite, but it's the difference between working on the part and working on the whole. And suddenly working on the whole, I just found much more richness in it and much more personal excitement.
And the leap from just directing here and there to actually having a theater and a school.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how a little more specifically, how that all came, grabbing a theater in Vermont. I mean, it was just there or what?
A friend of mine tipped me off about it, and I drove up there, and it was all settled in a weekend. Then I would take it over, and I got to work with some wonderful people in this small community, and I probably would have continued, but after 2 years, the writing was on the wall that really the only thing we really filled the house with were musicals. And I've just never been that into musicals. So I really resigned after 2 years. The theater did go on, and it's still going on.
What's the name of it?
The Bradford Repertory Theater. I think it's just called the Bradford Theater now. But we kind of played in good old-fashioned rep, where the last week and a half of the season, we would rotate all 5 productions we were doing practically every other night. And that was really exciting. I mean, it's good old-fashioned theater. It about killed every horse in the barn, with all the strikes and the setups. But it was really, really fun. And then I got back here, and the studio space I was using to teach in, I was working, sharing a space with Milton Katselis and Michael Shurtleff, and that space...
Shurtleff wrote a very well-known book about auditioning.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And that place, it was a lovely little carriage house right in the middle of a block, but somebody took it over, real estate, and built a great big apartment building there, so I was scrambling for space, and found a space then on 3rd Avenue. And we were there about 5.5 years and would do a 5 to 6 play season. And that's where we finally got very lucky with the trip back down by John Bishop, because Walter Kerr came opening night and gave it a big review in the Times. And the next exciting thing was every producer in New York was coming down to see it and bidding for it, and it did go to Broadway, and that was my big break to direct on Broadway, and it's an experience that probably is once in a lifetime, but it was we still talk about it and reminisce, all of us that were involved. And this was a time in New York that a lot of producers were coming down to off Broadway and what we were doing, and really bringing shows. Putz and Guild, I did a show for them a couple of years later, and that went to Broadway. But they were really scouting things like this from Circle Rep or Hudson Guild and all of us that were active in the off Broadway movement. And it was really an exciting time of a lot of creative producers, you know, like Manny Eisenberg and Phil Rose and people like that, that I was fortunate enough to be able to work with and then picked up the shows and believed that, you know, it could be taken uptown and work. And it was a very, very exciting time period before then. Producers, you know, now more go out to the regional theaters and pick up productions.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a rare thing. They grabbed about a decade ago Wilder, 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 that an off Broadway company did.
Mm-hmm.
Then they moved it up, and then they actually brought it to Circle in the Square.
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
It was very good. And,
yes.
But it was such a rarity,
mm-hmm,
that was the big news about it. They grabbed it from this little off Broadway company,
right,
and brought it up. And then the only thing that changed things then is, thanks to the Fringe Festival and You're in Town,
mm-hmm,
where they poke around for the musicals now that are off in that circle. But
right,
it's still very, very rare,
mm-hmm,
for it to make that leap. From off-Broadway to Broadway goes a lot,
mm-hmm,
but off to... But rolling back to something you were talking about before, what was so different, not only, I guess, with the trip back down experience, but you also directed K2 and one other show, the difference between directing on Broadway and directing off or off-off?
Well, the pressures mount enormously. I mean, when you direct off Broadway, I mean, you're head cook and bottle washer, right? You're taking out the garbage upon occasion.
Right.
And it's a wonderful kind of ensemble unity that you try to recreate on Broadway. I think, fortunately, with the shows I did on Broadway, we were able to create that same kind of unity. It's just so much more pressure and so much more at stake. And sometimes doing a play and many times I still see it, a play that, you know, should not be done on Broadway. The house is too big for it. The house is not right for the play. That maybe should have been kept off Broadway and would have gotten, you know, much more of a run. I've been very lucky with the producers I've worked with. I've gotten great support from those producers and excellent cooperation. I mean, I have not had one of those nightmare experiences of backers coming in and, you know, all that kind of pressure or firing actors or things like that. I have not been in one of those. I only was in one of them, and that was not on Broadway. I don't even want to mention
that. Oh, come on, come on. You got to tell the bad stories as well as the good.
Oh, it was a
nightmare. You don't have to name names, but just a little of the
well,
specifics.
It was a production I did some years ago of a Eugene O'Neill play not when Todd Haymes had it, but at a Roundabout Theater before Todd Haymes took over, and it was a nightmare in hell from every capacity.
Ouch.
And that was one of those that you'll just never forget for the rest of your life. I think it cost me about 6 months in therapy fees to get it out of my system.
Well, O'Neill will do that. You know.
It wasn't just O'Neill. It wasn't O'Neill. O'Neill will do that, because when you're working on O'Neill, you're most working with the most self-centered kind of characters that have ever been written. It's me, me, me. And, you know, you get into that with the cast and get immersed in that and kind of, you know, that really builds.
Does that happen to you, especially as a director, where you have to keep the entire script and all these things whirling around in your head, not just little parts of it? Do you end up living the play for a couple of months?
Oh, God, yes, more than a couple of months. More than a couple of months. I mean, I start working on a play, even that I'm going to do down here. I started working on Landscape of the Body, which I already knew and which had been produced by us about 10 years ago. I didn't direct it. But I started working on it in July.
Wow.
And you it's that immersion process, you know, that you read it and reread it, and then I start doing my production book, and exploring that, doing all the research. I love to get all the past reviews to see, you know, what if there's a consensus of opinion of what worked and what didn't work. Sometimes you really get, ooh, pay attention to that.
But do you, actually, I'm going to, oh, God, three different questions I want to ask at once. But do you read reviews when you're doing the piece, or do you wait for your own reviews until the run is over?
I usually read the reviews while the play is running. I know a lot of people don't. I guess I'm curious, and I want to find out what the person's opinion was. I mainly gather, like when I'm working on a production, I usually go over to Lincoln Center and gather the reviews, you know, of a previous production of it.
Right.
Just to see what I can learn. Many times I will go over there and look if they have a film on file, especially when I've been doing a Chekhov or an Ibsen or something like that, just to see. You know I'm going to go my own way with it, but I also, if it's somebody that's directed it that I really respect, I like to see what they've done.
Speaking of what they've done, maybe the people who are listening to the show, because this is not a theater show per se, it's more of a comedy, talk radio, music, and everything show. So people may not be all that aware of who John Guare is. He's best known, obviously, for penning Six Degrees of Separation. And also he wrote The House of Blue Leaves and Four Baboons Admiring the Sun and the book for the musical Two Gentlemen of Verona.
Mm-hmm.
People will probably be less familiar with Landscape of the Body. So why don't you tell us just a little bit about, well, what it's about?
Well, it's a lovely play that I was really searching for something to do that I really wanted to do this season. I started to think of landscape again because the play has always haunted me because it really deals with dreams and memories and random violence. It deals with New York City in the 70s, or the West Village in particular, which was kind of what the East Village has become now. And it was a whole world that was a meaningful world for me in the 70s when Trip Back Down happened and I have an off-Broadway theater, everything like that. So there was a lot of meaning. I also love John's work. There's a wistfulness in it. There's such a compassion for humanity in his work, even though, you know, some of the work gets dark. There's a wonderful thing about the inordinate beauty of innocence in this play and how dangerous that innocence can be. I think it's a play that deals with the family and the need and the desire and the dream to have a family. The other elements, I just think the beautiful thing, it's about, you know, for all of us, about our need to dream and to make those dreams come true. And I've always been drawn to that, even if it's something, maybe one of my favorite things I've ever done was The Iceman Cometh, but even those dreams are, it's filled with a hopeless hope, the dreams. But it's, the important thing is to dream, and I think John really stands for that. He also covers our craving, you know, for celebrity. And, you know, how we all want to end up in People's Magazine, maybe for 5 minutes. He covers so many areas like that. This whole play touches me deeply on all the things we do to survive the inevitability of our death. And there's wonderful humor in the play. And I really feel John cares so much about humanity. It's like he creates, you know, a blue, blue sky up there. And kind of a dark, dark earth sometimes.
Has he been involved in this remounting at all?
We've corresponded. He really helped us with a particular song because there's a number of songs in the play. And a song that, thank God, he said what he did because the musical director and I were completely misinterpreting the song. And he gave us an idea, and I took off on an idea he gave me. And the ballad, it's a ballad that right now I just want to say thank you, John, for that tip. I hope he will be coming to it. We've invited him to be our guest, he and his wife, on our opening night. And we are honoring him this year with our gala. We're honoring John Guare. Excuse me, are you still there, David?
Yeah, well, I'm here.
Yeah. We're honoring John Guare as well as Ellen Burstyn this year.
Oh. And you've worked with some pretty well-known people.
Yes.
Both on and, I guess, off-Broadway as well.
Mm-hmm.
Any good specific memories
Oh, I have wonderful memories going way back to Trip Back Down with John Cullum, who is just a gem. I mean, it was my first shot uptown, you know, and to have somebody like John to work with, I will never forget that.
People will best know John Cullum from Northern Exposure, but he was also in Urinetown for about a year and a half.
Yes,
so.
And he won a Tony for Shenandoah.
Right, of course.
And my long association with Betty Buckley has been a joy. I first worked with Betty and Celeste Holm up in Buffalo in a play, and Betty and I really have been fast friends. She teaches here at the studio. We've been friends for over 20 years.
Wow.
And some people like that. It was thrilling to work with Edward Norton for 4 years and see what happened to him. It's always wonderful with somebody like that that comes in and is so focused and talented beside, but they're so focused, nothing gets in their way. You know, I mean, and I don't mean obnoxiously or anything like that, but they're just, this is what they want, and they really go after it. And I know Ed rented movies and watched movies and picked up novels, and if he found something that he said, hey, I'm right for that, sometimes he inquired if rights were available. I know he was tracking down all the pretty horses for a long while, and I wish he would have gotten to do it because he would have been marvelous in it. Mm-hmm. But it's experience with people like that, I mean, seeing what's happened to him, I'm trying to think here.
Actually, we only have about two or three more minutes, so I wanted to grab another question real quick. As a teacher of acting, what is the most profound moment that you've had? Well, something where something clicked or you got through or something amazing happened?
Well, I think any moment, Dave, where an actor makes a major breakthrough, it's so exciting to be on the other end of that and see the joy that the actor's found, the light bulb that has gone on for the actor about the work and the understanding of the work, and then where the actor goes from that, or getting an actor to take the risks, take the chances, not just play it safe. And when they do, the joy in taking those risks and when they make that deep, deep inner connection, and it's not just something off the top of their head, but that they start to understand the work and really demand of themselves work on a much deeper, richer area. That's what's exciting. And I had a Friday class last week that we were working dominantly on Harold Pinter, and I'm very excited because Pinter has given me permission to do two of his plays next year. But the first four scenes from Harold Pinter, it was just thrilling to be in that class.
Okay, I've got one more question for you, and then we'll definitely tell everybody again about Landscape of the Body so everybody goes to see it. But I ask this of everyone I talk to, the funniest or the strangest or worst experience you've ever had directing or just being involved in a theatrical production?
Oh, when we had the little carriage house on East 84th Street, you had to come through a tunnel. We were doing The Time of Your Life by William Saroyan, and my designer had designed a San Francisco honky-tonk that you walked right into and across through the sawdust to the seats. And one Saturday matinee, because it was a little space backstage, and we had about 30 actors in it, John Bishop directed it, I produced it, I gave people permission to come late if they weren't on in the first act. So at intermission time, my society lady came through the tunnel with a guy. And, you know, it was came time for the second act, and everybody went in, and the guy was still standing outside. And I said to him, would you like to go in and be my guest? And he said, yes. And he goes in, and blackout. And the lights come up, and he's sitting at the table with Marielle, with that famous Marielle Josie, Ms. Imagely, which is, you know, they're guessing. And the girl playing Marielle looked at him and said, excuse me, sir, I'd like to be left alone. And he goes up to the bar. Well, it's 1937, so there was a sign, you know, a shot, 25 cents, a beer, a nickel. And John had rocked a lot of traffic coming in and out, sailors, prostitutes, and so forth. And this guy standing at the bar, there was no place for me inside, so I was watching it through a window, and I thought, oh, my God, my God. And he ordered a beer. So Fred, playing the bartender, gave him a beer, and he was watching this scene going on. I thought, if he opens his mouth, I've got to go in there and get him out of here. And two of the hookers came in, and he was standing where they were supposed to be, so they each got on each side of him, and each girl had about 40 miles of cleavage that he was looking down. So he's standing
there with
his beer, and then he turns around and orders another beer. The actors backstage thought I sent some guy in just to keep them on their toes. And they were cracking up backstage. And Fred finally leaned down to him and said, you're in a play, you know. And then the guy finished that beer, and he walks out, right? And he comes up to me, and he said, are you the owner here? And I said, yes. And he said, I really like this place, but I got to let you know you really watered down your drink. And after the show, Fred came up to me. He said he gave me $10 and told me to keep the change. He said he took out a wad of bills that would have choked a horse.
Whoa.
And I said to the actress, afterwards, I said, I thought that was your boyfriend. And she said, did you look at him? He didn't have any teeth. He followed me from the White Tower two blocks away. What do you think I go out with?
Well, you had a roll of bills. You don't know.
I don't know if he was some sailor on leave. I don't know who he was, but that's my favorite.
Thanks. That's about as good as it gets.
Oh, God, it was funny.
Anyway, Terry, I've got to wrap this up, but I want to remind everybody, please, to go see Landscape of the Body. It opens on January 29th, and it runs through February 22nd at your place, T. Schreiber Studio, on 151 West 26th Street. And I think tickets are cheap, like $15, so there's no excuse not to see it. Tickets also available at 212-352-3101, 352-3101 for Landscape of the Body. Terry Schreiber, I've got to have you back on because this was just not enough time.
Thank you, Dave.
But thank you so much for calling in, and hope to talk to you soon.
Good. I really appreciate it, and I hope you will enjoy the play.
Thanks, man.
Okay. Thank you, Dave.
Bye.
Bye-bye.